children, of course, don't have the capacity to understand. And
yeah.
these offenders are very, they're very skilled. They will, yes. You know, pretend to be someone that they're not.
No, that's absolutely right. Grace Tame, it's been great to speak to you, and you are not a curmudgeon. But I do love the use of the word. Leading child protection advocate and author Grace Tame. Coming up on AM with Nick Grimm, youth crime is on voters' minds as Labor faces a tough fight in Queensland. After 7.30, we'll talk defence. News time, 7 o'clock.
ABC News. Good morning, I'm Simon Lauder. New research suggests Australians believe supermarkets are largely responsible for cost of living pressures, along with energy companies, banks and government. An Australia Institute survey of more than 1,000 people found 3 in 5 said groceries are the most visible source of rising prices. Co-author of the report, Lisa Heap, says people are cutting back on necessities.
37% of respondents indicated that they'd cut back on heating and cooling their home. 29% said they'd had spent less on healthy foods. And 26% said that they'd spent less on going to the doctor.
An Israeli airstrike on a town in southern Lebanon has killed at least 16 people, including the local mayor. Here's Middle East correspondent Matthew Doran.
The attack on a municipal building in the town of Nabatea is being seen as yet another escalation in Israel's campaign in Lebanon. The country's caretaker prime minister is accusing the IDF of timing its attack with a meeting of council officials, a claim Israel is yet to respond to. The IDF says its ongoing strikes in southern Lebanon and elsewhere through the country, including the capital Beirut, are aimed at militant group Hezbollah, and it's saying its strikes around Nabatea hit dozens of Hezbollah targets. More than 2,300 people have been killed in Lebanon by Israeli airstrikes in the last year. Matthew Doran, ABC News, Jerusalem.
Ukraine has welcomed Australia's decision to donate almost all its aging Abrams tanks to the war effort against Russia. The Albanese government says it will transfer 49 of the Army's soon-to-be-replaced M1A1 fleet under a $245 million military assistance package. Ukrainian ambassador to Australia, Vasil Moroshnichenko, says the heavily armed vehicles will make a significant difference on the battlefield.
These tanks will be an essential part of our land defences. So this contribution from Australia is very much welcome. It will save many lives and it will help us better defend ourselves.
Meanwhile, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has presented what he's called a victory plan, which aims to strengthen his country's position enough to end the war with Russia. In Parliament in Kyiv, he said the key elements include a formal invitation to join NATO and the lifting of allies of restrictions on long-range strikes on Russia. Mr. Zelensky says if the plan is implemented now, it could end the war with Russia by next year.
We must speak honestly. If we don't step up now, Putin will have time to step up next year in such a way as to put an end to diplomacy forever. Russia must lose the war against Ukraine.
Data exclusively obtained by the ABC suggests landlords who own more than 20 properties are benefiting the most from negative gearing rules. Geraden Cairn reports.
The data obtained under Freedom of Information laws shows more than 2,500 people own 10 or more rental properties in Australia. About 170 own 20 or more. It also suggests this group benefit the most from negative gearing. Australia Institute economist Greg Jericho says that shows negative gearing is not an equitable arrangement.
In terms of who's benefiting, it really is going to those multiple investment property holders.
Several economists believe limiting the number of properties big investors can negatively gear could dampen house prices, but the federal government insists it has no plans to review the framework.
Logging is set to proceed in parts of New South Wales despite the discovery of large numbers of an endangered native animal. National Environment reporter Michael Slezak reports.
The federal government estimates more than half the country's total greater glider population has been wiped out in just over 2 decades. high numbers of the animals had been sighted in parts of New South Wales that are earmarked for logging. The discovery was made by community conservationists using drones at night. They found more than three times as many gliders as were detected by loggers during mandated surveys. The conservationists say logging must stop in the glider strongholds. Forestry Corporation New South Wales says the animals' den trees will be protected and the high numbers demonstrate the industry is doing a good job.
The Commonwealth Bank has been fined $7.5 million for breaching anti-spam laws. The communications regulator ACMA found that CommBank sent 140 million marketing messages to Australians between November 2022 and April this year without the option to unsubscribe. It's the bank's second breach of the code, having been fined over $3.5 million last year. The Commonwealth Bank says it accepts ACMA's findings and has apologised. This is ABC News. King Charles and Queen Camilla are heading to Australia for their first stop of their multi-country tour. Michelle Rimmer reports from London.
It's the long-awaited royal tour that some speculated may never happen. The visit is significant for several reasons. It's Charles's first trip to Australia since he ascended the throne, and he'll be the first male head of state to set foot on Aussie soil. That said, he's visited 16 times before, including to attend Geelong Grammar School for a term in the 60s. But he may face a lukewarm reception this time around. The royal visit has reinvigorated debate over whether Australia should become a republic, and all six state premiers have declined an invite to attend the King's Welcome event in Canberra.
Detectives have issued a warning to parents after the alleged sadistic sextortion of a teenage girl on the New South Wales mid-north coast. Jessica Kidd reports.
Acting on a tip-off from Queensland Police, detectives from the Sex Crimes Squad began investigating the alleged grooming of a 15-year-old girl in August. Police say a 28-year-old man met the girl online and threatened to send out violent and sexually compromising videos of her. The man was arrested near Coffs Harbour yesterday morning and charged with a range of serious offences, including threatening to kill or harm and causing child sexual activity. Police say sadistic sextortion differs from typical sextortion because the offender isn't doing it for financial gain, and they've issued a warning to parents to be alert to the risks.
South Australia's upper house has narrowly voted down proposed changes to the state's abortion laws after a heated debate. Stephanie Richards reports.
The vote was delivered after about 3 hours of debate in South Australia's upper house. The private members' bill, introduced by Liberal MLC Ben Hood, would have required people seeking a pregnancy termination after 27 weeks and 6 days to be induced and deliver a baby alive and then have the option of placing the baby up for adoption. Those in support argued the proposed changes would have balanced the rights of women and children, but opponents said it would have caused suffering to women and interfered with their access to healthcare. The bill was defeated at the second reading stage, 10 votes to 9.
Canberra Liberals leader Elizabeth Lee has apologised after she was caught on camera giving the finger to a journalist after a press conference. ACT political reporter Harry Frost.
Miss Lee was speaking to media after an election debate hosted by the Property Council yesterday afternoon. She became agitated with the journalist after he spoke over her while she was answering questions about policy costings and gave him the finger as she left the venue. Miss Lee later apologised for her behaviour.
I apologise. It's unacceptable and it's unbecoming.
She attributed the blunder to frustration with the journalist and denied it had anything to do with the pressure of the election campaign.
Residents of the small town of Casterton in Victoria's southwest are assessing the damage after a hailstorm tore through parts of the Wimmera last night. The region was lashed by heavy rain, hail and strong winds, with a severe thunderstorm warning issued, urging residents to stay indoors and be aware of fast-moving floodwaters. Paul Herbert, who owns a bakery in Casterton, says what started as a normal spring storm soon became an intense hailstorm, causing significant damage.
All hell broke loose. The average size was the size of a golf ball. Delivery van has been totaled. Windscreen's gone. Looks like someone's taken to it with a ball-peen hammer. But that's most of the cars in town. In Foodworks, that's our local supermarket, their ceiling collapsed.
With sport now, here's Jared Coote.
Bailey Smith is heading from the Western Bulldogs to Geelong as part of a four-club trade on the final day of the AFL trade period. The Cats gave up pick 17 and 38 to receive Smith and pick 45. The deal also involves Jack McRae joining St Kilda from the Bulldogs and Matt Kennedy moving to the Western Bulldogs from Carlton. And Sydney Swans veteran Luke Parker has joined North Melbourne alongside Jacob Constant for pick 44. Australia T20 cricket stand-in vice-captain Elise Perry says the team hasn't ruled captain Elisa Healy out of tomorrow morning's World Cup semi-final against South Africa. Healy injured her right foot earlier in the tournament against Pakistan, but hasn't been ruled out of the tournament. Perry says the medical staff continue to assess the situation.
The medical staff and the team are going to give her every opportunity and possibility to play tomorrow night, but I don't think anything's changed in that respect. We'll just have to see in the next 24 hours.
And Thomas Tuchel has signed as the new manager of England's men's football team on an 18-month deal.
To finance Wall Street, stocks are rising following better-than-expected profits reports from big companies. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up by around 0.8%. Oil is down. The global benchmark Brent crude trading at $74.30 US a barrel. The Aussie dollar buying 66.6 US cents. ABC News.
Across Australia, you're listening to Breakfast on RN.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. I'm Nick Grimm, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. Australia will gift almost 50 ageing battle tanks to help Ukraine's ongoing fight against invading Russian forces. A number of the 49 M1A1 Abrams tanks to be delivered to Ukraine will first need to be remediated to be made combat ready, or delivered as is to be used as spare parts. Political reporter Isabel Rowe is in Canberra. Isabel, talk us through what Australia is giving to Ukraine.
This is a request that came from the Ukrainian government more than a year ago now for Australia to send its ageing M1A1 fleet. So Australia's announced this morning it'll send 49 of those tanks to Ukraine. They've never been used in combat in Australia and they're being phased out of the Australian Army because we are getting a new fleet at the moment. It is a bit of a change of heart. The Defence Minister Richard Marles said earlier this year that this wasn't on the agenda, but there have been repeated requests since then for help from the Ukrainian government, including from the Ukrainian ambassador to Australia. So this latest package of tanks is worth about $245 million. But most importantly, the government says it'll bolster the firepower that Ukraine has against Russia 18 months after Russia first invaded Ukraine. The Defence Industry Minister, Pat Conroy, is attending a NATO Defence Ministers meeting in Brussels this week, and he says he'll brief his Ukrainian counterpart directly about the latest support package.
These tanks will deliver more firepower and mobility to the Ukrainian armed forces and complement the support provided by our partners for Ukraine's armoured brigades. This announcement is valued at $245 million Australian dollars.
Pat Conroy there. And Isabel, how has Ukraine responded?
Well, as I said, this was a request that came more than a year ago. They are very happy to receive the information that Australia has decided to send this ageing fleet. We've heard from Australia's ambassador, Vasil Marushnyshenko. He says that the Ukrainian government is very happy and that some tanks of this type have already been provided by the US government, but these tanks from Australia will be incredibly important for its ground defence.
These tanks will be an essential part of our land defences. So this contribution from Australia is very much welcome. It will save many lives and it will help us better defend ourselves.
That's Ukrainian Ambassador to Australia, Vasil Marushnyshenko, speaking there. And before him, Isabel Rowe. And coming up on Radio National Breakfast, you can hear a full interview with the Defence Industry Minister, Pat Conroy. As the war in Ukraine grinds on, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has laid out his victory plan to the country's parliament. The plan, which includes his request for an unconditional invite to join NATO, is being viewed as Ukraine's last effort to strengthen its hand in any future ceasefire negotiations with Russia. It also throws the impetus back onto Ukraine's key allies, long wary of doing anything that could escalate the conflict. Luke Radford reports.
After months of speculation, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky stood before the parliament and began to reveal his vision for ending the war.
It is realistic to both defend our positions on the battlefield in Ukraine and simultaneously bring the war back to Russian territory so that Russians truly feel what war is like and, despite Russian propaganda, begin to redirect their hatred toward the Kremlin.
The president spoke of how the plan relies on more than just increased military aid. He says an invitation to join NATO is fundamental for peace and that Russian President Vladimir Putin must understand that his geopolitical calculations have failed. No country is yet to formally respond to or endorse the plan, but NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte says Ukraine will join the alliance when the time is right.
The victory plan we discussed, we are also discussing it with allies. It will no doubt also be on the table this week when, of course, we have on Thursday the meeting between Ukraine and NATO on Thursday night. As you know, at the NATO summit, allies agreed that Ukraine's path to membership is irreversible and Ukraine is closer to NATO than ever before.
Despite that promise, NATO has not put a timeline on Ukrainian membership, and the country cannot join the alliance while it's still at war. Ukrainian citizens have had mixed responses to the plan. This woman, whose brother and son have been killed in the fighting, says Ukraine must win at all cost.
To sit at the peace talks table? Tell me, what did all those boys die for? They died for our freedom, for us to be independent, and not to hold hands together with the enemy. To announce peace talks is to give Russia a chance to strengthen and to gather forces to attack us again. I don't know the way out of it. The war is in a stalemate. There is no end to it. There are no boys left.
Russia has called the Ukrainian plan ephemeral, saying it's a camouflaged US ploy to continue the war. The US is yet to formally respond to the plan, but has pledged a further $425 million in military aid to Ukraine.
That report by Luke Radford. You're listening to AM, where it's 15 minutes past 7. And for more news, you can download the ABC Listen app. Now to the latest on the cost of living crisis, which is being blamed for Australia's plummeting birth rate. Well, new research out today reveals groceries remain one of the major cost imposts on Australian households. And among voters, there's a strong appetite for political leadership to generate more competition inside the supermarket sector. One of the other big drains on individual budgets is the high cost of housing. And the Business Council is now calling for greater consistency on zoning rules to help with the construction of more affordable homes. Evelyn Manfield has more.
Australians are doing it tough, and the pressure's mounting on political leaders to put the brakes on rising costs.
Not only were people tightening their belts in terms of discretionary spending, but they're also cutting back on necessities.
Lisa Heap is a senior researcher with the think tank the Australia Institute, which surveyed 1,000 people about cost of living.
37% of respondents indicated that they'd cut back on heating and cooling their home. 29% said they'd had spent less on healthy foods, and 26% said that they'd spent less on going to the doctor.
The report found financial stress has meant a quarter of people have dipped into their savings or superannuation account. But it's the supermarkets people are most fed up with.
In the survey, 83% of respondents ascribed some blame or a great deal of blame to supermarkets, and 82% to energy companies, followed by banks and the government after that.
Lisa Heap says 60% of respondents identified groceries as the number one expense costing them more.
The idea that there should be action on supermarket competition has been fully endorsed by these survey participants.
It could mean there's reward for the political parties voters think are taking the biggest stick to the supermarkets, a handy bit of information as politicians face a federal election in 2025. The other key sticking point for voters, housing. But the Business Council of Australia has its own idea to help solve the housing crisis, revamping zoning laws.
There are a couple of key things that we can do in that regard. The first is we can really focus on mid to high level density in areas around critical transport hubs.
Bran Black is the chief executive of the Business Council. He points to Auckland in New Zealand, where roughly three quarters of residential land was rezoned, leading to a big rise in approvals for new housing supply and more affordable prices.
For two-bedroom dwellings, it was approximately 20% less than what it would have been without the rezoning.
Brand Black thinks there's no way Australia will meet its target of building 1.2 million new well-located homes in 5 years with current zoning laws. Instead, a nationally consistent approach and plan to zoning is needed going forward.
South Australia's got a great consolidated approach to zoning with a single document that articulates all the different zones. In Queensland, there is a fantastic concierge service that enables home builders to go to a single front door in order to access the various different concurrences and approvals that they might need from multiple agencies. If you were to take all of these great initiatives that are already rolled out across different states and territories and apply them in every single state and territory, we'd be seeing really demonstrable increases in our capacity to deliver housing supply.
As part of the National Housing Accord Agreement with the Commonwealth, the states and territories have agreed to reform zoning laws, but the pressure's on to make more progress.
Evelyn Manfield reporting. As Labor in Queensland battles for a fourth term in power, the Gold Coast is shaping as one of its toughest fights. Australia's youngest housing minister, Megan Scanlon, has held the seat of Gavin for two terms. But the 31-year-old local is up against the Liberal National Party's Bianca Stone, a former TV reporter who says voters want action on youth crime. Stephanie Smale reports.
You got any questions before you go in, or you know what you're doing?
Standing in an industrial lot next to the roaring M1 motorway, Labor's Megan Scanlon is working to keep her job, handing out how-to-vote cards in the suburb of Nerang on Queensland's Gold Coast.
I think I've always been the underdog. There is 11 seats here on the Gold Coast, 10 of them are held by the LNP.
Nice to meet you.
Gold Coast born and bred, she took over in the seat of Gavin as a 24-year-old, the youngest woman to be elected to the Queensland Parliament. Support for the Palaszczuk government's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic helped MPs like Megan Scanlon keep their seats in the last election. But as housing minister, she says the influx of interstaters, coupled with the housing crisis, has also made things harder, especially when there's pushback against development.
I acknowledge that often people don't want to see change in their neighbourhood, but if we want families to be able to live in this community, they need somewhere to live. I'm here to win. I'm not here for a haircut.
Former TV journalist Bianca Stone is handing out how-to-vote cards in Nerang too. She's running for the Liberal National Party in the seat, saying years of reporting about crime prompted her to give politics a go.
Whether you're a victim of crime or you're just fearful of crime, that is a real fear, and people should not be living in fear in this state.
She says she's getting good feedback on the LNP's tough-on-crime stance, and locals are telling her they're ready for change.
And that's why you're seeing so many people come through this polling booth, cars lined up outside in the car park, because people have made up their mind.
But she's hit back at questions over her party's stance on abortion and how they'd respond to a political push to criminalise it again.
It's not something that's on the table. What would your vote be? Look, that's a hypothetical at this stage, so I don't want to answer hypotheticals.
That made me mad. I thought, what the hell are we doing, going backwards?
The abortion issue is one keeping some voters in this electorate on Labor's side. Hospital spending is helping too.
I work as an emergency doctor, and it's very disheartening to see long wait times. Opening up the new hospitals will, surely improve patient outcomes.
But Labor's efforts to build housing on an unused golf course have cost them this vote.
Once you lose urban green space, you never, ever get it back.
And these voters say crime and Labor's near decade in power sent their vote the Liberal National Party's way.
They just haven't provided any relief for any of the major problems, particularly crime. It's just stupid.
We've had the same government for a long time and we're due for change.
There's still 10 days until a result will be called, but hundreds of thousands of Queenslanders have already cast their vote.
Stephanie Smale reporting. So-called sugar daddy websites promise mutually beneficial relationships between wealthy men and young women. But a court case in Western Australia has highlighted a disturbing trend of underage girls joining these sites. Child safety advocates warn social media platforms like TikTok have been glamorising a dangerous practice. Brianna Melville prepared this report.
Day in the life of a sugar baby. Get picked up by a private jet. Flying to Monaco,
Videos on social media platform TikTok make life as a rich man's sugar baby sound glamorous and desirable. Being a sugar baby involves mostly young women giving their time and affection to older men, sugar daddies, in exchange for gifts and money. But there's a dark side, like this woman discovered.
I was concerned that he was going to show up at my house because he knew where I lived.
Jenny, which is not her real name, says the social media platform doesn't warn women, particularly underage girls, about these dangers.
They're children, their brains aren't developed, and I feel like they don't have a sense of like what's right or what's wrong, and they're really easily manipulated.
It's what happened to a 14-year-old West Australian girl who pretended to be 5 years older on a sugar baby website. She ended up meeting with a middle-aged man at his home and told police he offered her money for sex. We've voiced the girl's comments to police.
We saw on TikTok that you can get a sugar daddy and they pay you to talk to them.
But the man was recently found not guilty by a district court jury on charges of indecently dealing with a child and encouraging a child to engage in sexual behaviour. Still, child safety experts believe it reflects a worrying trend. Susan McLean, a former police officer and cyber safety expert, says she often sees children sharing sexual photos online and content on apps like TikTok drives them onto sugar dating platforms.
You only hear about the good, you don't hear about the bad. And young girls are impressionable. Young girls want money. They want a glamorous lifestyle. They don't see the harm in it.
Jacqueline McGowan-Jones is WA's Commissioner for Children and Young People.
They don't understand that they are putting themselves at risk of sexual crimes as well as other crimes, violence, being trafficked.
And according to her, keeping children safe requires more open conversations.
There is a real need, and the eSafety Commissioner is looking at these things, but there is a real need for open conversations with our children and young people about safety online.
While former police officer Susan McLean says tougher measures are needed to stop adult platforms being accessed by children.
They're not going to self-regulate. Why would you self-regulate to something that is going to cut your income? We need robust laws and enforcement.
Several sugar daddy websites and apps exist online, promising to connect young, attractive women with older, wealthy men. A spokesperson for one site, Sugar Daddy Meet, told the ABC it strictly prohibits underage individuals from registering or using the platform, and it continuously works to strengthen security to prevent underage access.
Brianna Melville reporting, and the ABC has approached social media platform TikTok for a response. If you need help or you know someone who does, meanwhile, 1-800-RESPECT is the National Sexual Violence Counselling Service. That number is 1-800-73-7732. And the number for the Kids Helpline is 1-800-55-18-00. Facial scanning technology used on passports is helping give scientists a better insight into the secret lives of sea turtles. A conservation group is deploying artificial intelligence technology commonly used in airports to track and analyse the marine animals without interrupting their comings and goings. Jessica Lamb has more.
Uncovering the mysteries of the deep, but with some help from artificial intelligence. Now, anyone who snaps a photo of the left side profile of a turtle's face can put it into a database and track their movements. The facial scales are unique and act like a human fingerprint.
So in the same way that a human would walk through a passport office or an immigration office and have their face scanned and recognised by the machine, we can use the same technology on wildlife.
Sarah Jantos is the founder and director of the not-for-profit conservation group Green Heroes, which is running the project called Ocean ID.
It's actually much more simple to teach the machine to read a turtle's face than it is to read a human's face.
Sarah says the system is non-invasive and something that anyone who snorkels or swims or dives can participate in.
It means scientists can gather greater volumes of data and it's cost effective.
It doesn't introduce any extra articles into the environment, like tags that fall off or glues that need to be put onto turtles' carapaces, things like that.
Other methods to track the creatures can be time consuming and disruptive. University of Queensland Associate Professor of Zoology David Booth has been studying sea turtles since 1996.
One was flipper tagging, which is quite invasive, and the other way was putting satellite tags on them, which is very expensive, and you can only do several of those. It's not something the general public can do. With technology advancing the way it is, it's a great game changer.
Manual facial recognition for sea turtles has been used by researchers for the past decade, but it is labour intensive and takes hours. So this new form of AI monitoring can capture a large sample size.
Always important to have an idea of where the animals are and what the numbers are and what the recruitment rate is.
The critically endangered Hawksbill turtle is found in the tropical waters off Queensland's east coast and as far south as northern New South Wales. Its elusive migration habits inspired dive instructor Christy Morgan to get others involved.
That was my conversation really with Sarah, was let's really get to know these turtles. Let's get to know, are they locals? Are they travelling through? Are they stopping by? And then we said, let's make this global to be able to keep track and get to know all of them.
The organisation is planning to expand the trial into a mobile app in the near future, with the hope it can track other marine life too.
Jessica Lamb reporting. In finance on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has risen by more than 0.75%. The Australian dollar is a little weaker this morning. It's buying 66.7 US cents. And that's AM. I'm Nick Grimm. It's 7:30 and good morning and happy Thursday to Patricia Karvelas.
Happy Thursday to you too, Nick. You're listening to ABC Radio National Breakfast. The top stories we're following this morning. Australia is sending dozens of tanks to Ukraine at a time when the embattled country is trying to garner enough support for its bold plan for victory. We'll also take a look at the Queensland Leaders Debate, which happened yesterday, and take a look at what happened in South Australia yesterday in the Parliament last night. It was a drama-filled vote on controversial late-term abortion reforms. The Liberals' opposition shadow minister for women joins me and will detail why she had to make a mad dash to Parliament to cast her vote. First, Luke Sidham-Dundon is here with an update of the news headlines at 7:30.
Morning, PK. As Australia announces more military aid for Ukraine, President Volodymyr Zelensky has unveiled his long-awaited plan for victory, telling Ukraine's parliament the plan could end the war by next year. Key elements include a formal invitation to join NATO and the lifting by allies of restrictions on long-range strikes on Russia. Elsewhere in the world, an Israeli airstrike in southern Lebanon has killed at least 16 people, including a local mayor. It follows the UN claiming an Israeli tank fired upon its peacekeeping mission, UNIFIL, which is operating in the region, destroying cameras and damaging